Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is it. The time has come.
Saturday night's all right for fighting. Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night with Adam Catterall and Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that
on Talk Sport.
You're listening to the Fight Night podcast on TalkSport with me, Gareth Davis, and my great old mucker, Adam Catterall. First of all, we talked about the situation with Anthony Joshua facing the number 27, or maybe it was 29, fighter in the world at heavyweight, Jermaine Franklin. It's been announced. It's in April. Joshua's climbed down, really, after 12 world title fights in a row. Here's what me and Adam think about that.
Now, don't know if you've seen this, Gareth, because I know that you speak to Mr. Hearn quite a bit. He was asked a few questions this week whilst he's been out in New York promoting the Amanda Serrano and Cruz Undisputed fight this evening. He was asked a few questions and my name came up as part of the conversation. And obviously one person put my name towards Mr. Hearn and he reacted talking about me being contradictory. Now, what he's referring to, if I could just flag this up, is that when Anthony Joshua lost to the pound-for-pound number one, in my opinion, Alexander Usyk, I said that Anthony Joshua needs to go away. He needs to find the eye of the tiger. He needs to go knock some people out. He needs a tune-up. That's the exact words that I used. Now, when I was saying that, I had an idea of the level of tune-up in my head. Obviously, this week, we're going to be finding out that that tune-up, which everybody, I think, expected Anthony Joshua to have, is going to be against Jermaine Franklin. My opinion is that Jermaine Franklin is too far of a step backwards for Anthony Joshua. He is the former two-time unified heavyweight champion of the world. He's about to fight a guy coming off a loss who is not ranked by any sanctioning body and outside, well, just about in the top 30 heavyweights in the world. I think that's too far back. Personally, I think Anthony Joshua, Dillian White is the fight that should be happening. That's where we should be going for Anthony Joshua's next fight, because I think he learns an awful lot more from that than he does against Jermaine Franklin. If he blows Jermaine Franklin away in two rounds, three rounds, four rounds, what does he really learn from that? I don't think he learns too much. People will tell me that he's bedding in with a new trainer. Great. But for me, Anthony Joshua is in the top five heavyweights in the world, and this is too far of a step back for him at this stage of his career.
Well, I mean, yes, you're right in a certain way, but you're rewriting history there. Because, you know, when a great fighter has had a couple of losses and he's had back-to-back losses over 2 years, they very often in the history of boxing have been given a chance to come back again. When Muhammad Ali lost to, and it's coming, the date's coming up, February the 14th, Valentine's Day, when Muhammad Ali lost to Joe Frazier in 1971, he got a chance to, in between times, before he fought Frazier in the Rumble in the Thriller Manila, and he fought George Foreman in Zaire in 74. He got a chance to fight other fighters like Joe Bugner and other. You know, he fought 10 times between 72 and 73, I think it was, or 73 and 74. And I think you know there are a lot of people will side with you on this argument, but I think it's a good opponent. I know he's only ranked 29 in the world. I was there live when he fought Dillian White in November. Yeah, and he put up a good fight against him. You know, he's got desire, I think Anthony Joshua knocks him out in 5 or 6 rounds, and we'll all say, what were we worrying about? There's a little bit of banana skin involved. Eddie, rather than Freddie, has put pressure on him by saying that, you know, that there's not really anywhere to go if he loses this fight, and he can't afford to lose it. I think he knocks him out in 5 or 6 rounds, and I think he knocks Dillian out. Dillian may not appreciate me saying that, but I think Joshua, you said Yard earlier, by the way, so you've still got Anthony Yard in your head.
Have I? Sorry.
I'm not. I'm the same. I've been talking about him all week. I don't have any resentment about this. And what'll happen, and you're right, people will say, if he knocks him out in 5 rounds or he goes 12 rounds with him, he'll be damned if he knocks him out in 5 rounds, and he'll be damned if he goes 12 rounds with him. He shouldn't go 12 rounds with him, but it's just the situations he is in. He's a victim of his own success. We all know that at the moment. And all he's trying to do, I think, is look spectacular for a couple of fights. That's what Eddie wants him to do. We all remember the last fight of a fighter. That's the weird thing. It sticks in our memory. I can't argue on one side, but this is the way boxing happens in another. Even the great champions, you know, Rocky Marciano, Joe Lewis particularly, they used to say he was fighting bum of the month at one point.
Yeah.
That was what the media called it.
Do we not need to change those attitudes, though? Because me and you obviously have these conversations all the time on this program about trying to attract new fans, keeping new fans interested, bringing them to our sport. And we're seeing fans obviously gravitate towards MMA. There's nothing wrong with that. But they're also gravitating towards this misfit stuff, which I've got a bit of a problem with, and various other bits and bats. And I think that comes down to years and years of fans not getting the fights that they want to see. Anthony Joshua is still the money in this division. I don't care what anybody says. He is still a commercial colossus. Yes, he's coming off the back of 2 losses, 3 losses in his last 5. I get all that. But 2 of those losses are against the pound-for-pound number one, the best fighter on the planet, in my opinion. Other people might argue that, but Alexander Usyk is the absolute business. There's no shame in that. I just don't want Anthony Joshua to go all the way back here, where I actually think he only needs to go here, really.
He should be fighting Dillian, is that what you're saying?
Yes,
he should be fighting Dillian next.
I think it's the perfect matchup for them both. I don't see the point in having that interim fight before Dillian. Have the Dillian fight. And if he looks spectacular against Dillian, then all of a sudden you go in, Anthony Joshua's back. But if you do that against Jermaine Franklin, I don't think a lot of fans say that. They go, well, you know, we kind of expected that. He should be beating that level of opponent. So where is he really? We don't really know. I think a better level of opponent will give us more answers. That's basically my point.
Yeah, look, I think you make a very, as I say, you make a very, very valid point. It's something that mixed martial arts doesn't do now. It, as you say, that there is a crossover element. There's a parody boxing element now. There's a, you know, there's an ambushing, a hijacking of boxing, if you like, as the platform for people to be entertained with grudges between people to fight each other. And even though we've come out of a week when we saw pure boxing, we saw from the sublime to the ridiculous last weekend in a way, because we saw a WWE face-off, and then we saw one between Jake Paul and Tommy Fury, which is, you know, I've said it loads of times now, and I'll say it more than once on the show tonight. It's an area title worth millions of pounds and millions and millions of views online. It may do millions of views online because of the followings the two men have, and how it's gathering momentum like a snowball. There's the other side of it is pure boxing. I don't disagree with you that Dillian White would have been a very good opponent next for Anthony Joshua, but he's had 12 world title fights in a row. I did write a column about this the other day in the Telegraph, and I think he's in a difficult position. I'm fascinated to see what numbers it will do on DAZN, his first true fight on purely the DAZN platform on pay-per-view, I imagine it will be, if it is.
It can't be pay-per-view, fight. I know he is...
Well, we don't know yet, do we? It's going to be announced next.
We
believe that Anthony will be in London next week. There's things going on in New York today. They've officially announced it. But look, there is a time. This is a time of change, and it could be a time for change in boxing. But when I look at that word, I say the algorithm. They do need to build boxers sometimes. There's a way of building boxers. People might not like it. Boxers need to be stepped up. Even with Anthony Yard, by the way, the 2 Lyndon Arthur fights, the Sergey Kovalev fight, beyond that, he hadn't had major fights going into the Beterbiev, the Artur Beterbiev fight. And there is an argument for people at Anthony Yard that why hadn't he fought of the Callum Smith, the Joshua Boatsies, the Craig Richards, the Dan Azizes of these worlds, before he fought these world titles. It's unfortunately the way that boxing's fractured with promoters and broadcasters. They're in their own... They're on their own motorways, aren't they? That one's on the M1, one's on the M4, one's on the M11, and they're going in different directions. And it is something that I think could be changed. And I know we're going to talk to him later. You have to appreciate and give praise to people like Joe Joyce for stepping in, as you mentioned earlier. He's fighting Zhang. I mean, that's a. I mean, I mentioned it.
I mean,
well,
look at that.
It's an incredible fight. It's a real jeopardy fight for Joe Joyce.
Yes, I agree with that. Joe Joyce is in a situation where he should be fighting for the heavyweight championship, but sadly, those belts are all taken by two men, and we want those two men to fight each other. So George Joyce has to do something. So if you look around at options, obviously he's the WBO interim champion. He's got to look down those WBO rankings. He's taking on a guy that's in those rankings, who is a solid fighter, Olympic silver medalist. That's a good, if you want, I hate the term of tune-up, keep busy fights, but that's what that is. It's a solid fight. I just think that Franklin's just too far of a step back for an Olympic gold medalist and former two-time heavyweight champion of the world.
I cannot argue with you, but I understand why they've done it, Ed. Well, it's a serious subject for boxing, and it's the aftercare of fighters. Cal Brook, in a video this week, snorting some kind of white powder. Someone put the video out. We understand it's a friend of his, or someone certainly put it out. Cal has responded and has apologised on social media. I understand. I reached out to him this week, spoke to his parents. He's in good shape. He's fine. He's going to get back in the ring. He's going to get back into training. Here's what we think, Adam and I, about aftercare for fighters. We follow their narratives, we follow their journeys. We need to care about them after they've hung up the gloves as well.
A former world welterweight world champion, Cal Brook, a video published by the Sun newspaper showing him appearing to snort a white powder in a home. I don't know whether it was a party, but it was either in his house or somebody else's house. In the aftermath of that video surfacing, Kel has come to social media admitting that he is struggling with retirement. He's seeking help for mental health problems. And he has obviously issued an apology to anybody that the video has upset. The question that obviously then comes off the back of that, when you see a fighter, a retired fighter that is open and honest with the struggles that he is facing now in retirement after his career has ended, the question is, does boxing need better aftercare? Now, I think there's two elements to this, Gareth, because obviously we've got fighters and a large percentage of them, 90%, 95%, that when they do retire, when they do call time on the game, they haven't got the amount of money, the financial needs to be able to, you know, go and live on a beach and go and enjoy the fantastic career that they had and go and enjoy a new life. They often have to look for new incomes, new careers, and various things like that. So there's that element of this, support from a financial point of view. I don't think Kel's in that boat because he's made an awful amount of cash, and I'm, to my knowledge, he's invested well and he still has that cash. But there is the element of finding that secondary purpose. Ricky Hatton speaks about it very openly and obviously went down a different route to try and create the highs that he once had in front of all those fantastic fans. Tyson Fury is very fearful of it. And that is why he openly admits that he came out. Well, he said he retired and then came out of retirement last year. And obviously now we're experiencing it with Cal Brook. It happens time and time again where sports stars, not just boxers, but sports stars that have been at the top, have listened to the fans, the 20,000s, the 30,000s, the stadiums sing their name. And then when all that noise stops, it can become a very, very lonely place.
Do you know what's weird, Ed, is that I reached out to Cal Brook this week and he's changed his number, but I know his mum and dad, Terry and Julie, I know them very well. I've sent them messages. I'm hoping Terry gets back to me tonight, because my understanding is that Cal is with his mum and dad. I reached out to Dominic Ingle as well. He's hoping that Cal's going to get back in the gym with him next week. 2 years ago to the very day, right? What is it, February the 4th today?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. February the 4th, 2020, in the Telegraph, I did an interview with Cal Brook when he talked about his depression. And he's so low, he says, I feel like I'm standing on the edge of a cliff And I'm there for days and days. Days and days pass by. I'm quoting him now. Can't go home. Can't be around my kids. Don't know where I am. And, you know, when he came back for the Amir Khan fight, that kind of awakened him again. And there's a couple of things here as well. You know, I did the retirement piece with him last year. We had it on TalkSport as well. He'd reached out and said, you know, I'm done after he beat Amir Khan. That wonderful night we were up there in Manchester. A great night. And I had a feeling then that he might need boxing to help him come back again. It's good that he's speaking out about it. Obviously, he was snorting some white powder in that video, which has heralded all of this, as you say. But I don't think he needs to apologise to anyone, by the way. I don't know why he was apologising in the tweet, because, you know, we all go through dark times. When I reached out to him this week, it was nothing to do with work. I mean, if he'd wanted to talk to me on the record, fine, but just wanted to know how and where he was. The big thing in this, as you kind of alluded to at the very start, we need some kind of boxers' union with the clever guys who know how to deal with people, who are wise from the world, wise in the world, where boxers pay a small stipend every time they fight, and whether that's aligned to the Boxing Board of Control and the sanctioning bodies, I don't know. But we need an aftercare service for boxers, and I think it has to come in a union, like Professional Football Association has a union. They can rely on people. People who are very good at pastoral care get involved in it, whether they be footballers or officials or people in suit or in life. You know, Leon Spinks working as a janitor in a school and wandering Vegas, signing autographs. And you know, it's very, you know, God rest his soul. You know, it's a very, very tough business, you know. And I do think we've reached a point in the world where, yes, it's a primeval sport, Ed, and we love the visceral nature of this sport and the narrative of fighters. We talk about where they come from. We need to know where they go as well afterwards, in my view.
I think that's a beautiful line, and that is absolutely my sentiments as well. I think, and I don't think I'm doing a disservice or being derogatory to any fighter. A lot of people that come into this game, obviously they've got elite talent, but a lot of it comes down to lack of choice. They are fighters purely by nature. They use fighting in order to better their lives, and therefore school and academics aren't necessarily at the forefront of younger lives. That, I'm generalising there. That's not for everybody. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, George Joyce, for example, has got a Bachelor of Arts degree, hasn't he? But on the wider scale, that is nine times out of ten the case. So what I believe needs to come in is, like you've just said, that pastoral care, that just a place that can point people in the direction of what they want to do next. It might not necessarily be within boxing. It might be something totally book deals, media things, training, coaching, all these types of things where people, it seems at the moment, where fighters finish their career, we pat them on the back and say, thanks a lot, mate, wicked, and that's it. We forget about them.
Yeah.
Rather than say, okay, right, you're coming to the end of your career. Have you thought about this? Have you thought about this? What we're going to be doing next? Are we going to be doing this? Because you might have 5 to 10 million quid in the bank, but at 36 years of age, that's a long period of your life doing nothing, isn't it? You need to be active. These people have been used to getting up at 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning and with a purpose. We all need purpose in life. And I just think boxing can help those people try and find what that purpose is in their secondary careers.
Yeah, and I think what happens is when you're very prominent and when you have a reason and when you have a purpose, we've all got demons. Show me someone that doesn't have demons. If people say they have no demons, I don't believe them. It's how we control those demons. And while our fighters are doing what they do best and physically getting all the endorphins from training, and you know, we're all learning, and mental health is talked about a lot in life now, in society, certainly in our society, in the first world. And it's a first world problem, I think. The talk of exercise and allowing your body its freedom and having that freedom of not being stuck in a chair at work or whatever it is. The fighters live a very physical life. And I think, I mean, I was listening to statistics the other day about, I think 30% of people to to our cause. You know, boxing is a very working class sport. Elliot Wurstle mm-hmm. wrote a great piece in Boxing News this week, by the way. He's a fantastic intellectual on Fight Sports, saying how when Liam Smith made those homophobic slurs at Chris Eubank Jr. the other day, it was disappointing to see, but it's the sport. We have to accept that the sport is learning. Football's like that. It's a sport that's learning about society. Society reacts to it and denigrates it, and things that our fighters do sometimes bring the sport down. I'm not trying to bring Liam down. It was a fantastic performance, but we didn't appreciate that, nor do we appreciate Chris Eubank Jr. saying, "Oh, you cheat on your wife," or accusing him and alleging of that. It's nothing to do with boxing, and it was very puerile at the time, but it's just where they were. They're not educated to be like that. 30% of young men leave secondary education without GCSEs in maths and English. You know, many of those are our boxers. They're physical people, many with things like ADHD and Asperger's and all sorts of things. And I think, you know, Kel has got a party problem, and you know, he's bored. He's not getting those endorphins from, and he's always been like that. We know he's been a party animal in his life. He's been through a machete attack, remember? He's been through extraordinary times. And you know, to quote him again, when he lost those two fights to Errol Spence and Gennady Golovkin, it ruined me. It was dark, a very dark time. I needed counsellors. Words can't describe how low I've been. I can't think about what to do. I'm that far gone when I felt like this. I'm that lost. My mind doesn't think about time, about any of the positives around me in life. That's where he is right now. He needs to get back in the gym, needs counselling. I'm glad he's with his mum and dad. That's what I hear, Terry and Julie. And I just hope he gets back. And do you know what? I hope he gets back and boxes again.
Yeah, as long as the matchup is right for him, I don't want him, you know, in the...
Liam Smith? Himself. Liam Smith? Do you buy that?
To be fair, to an extent, yeah. To an extent, I think Liam and Kel are probably at very similar stages, aren't they, in life? Former world champions. Yeah, I can see that. But
Conor Benn?
First and foremost... Stop it. You know where I'm at with Conor at the moment. Regarding Kel, first and foremost, I want him to just get right with the way that he thinks about himself.
Yeah.
I want him to get healthy and happy mentally. And then, of course, have the discussion about fighting again and doing something within the game. Of course, that is an open discussion. But first and foremost, when you hit rock bottom, and this hopefully is rock bottom for him, when this now has been made public and people are obviously having an opinion on that, and that's obviously not a nice feeling for him. It might be the catalyst that he needs, Gareth. Hiding behind closed doors and doing it behind closed doors and all this type of thing. You can get away with it and get away with it and get away with it, and you can lie to yourself. Can't lie to himself now. It's out there. People know.
Yeah.
So therefore, this could be the catalyst for him making some serious positive change, whether it be the social circles that he's keeping and also from a health point of view, because we don't want to see him on that. So let's get him, hopefully he can make those changes and move forward now.
Can I just add, before we go to break, someone's done it deliberately. I mean, if someone's done it to maybe to wake him up because they're worried about him, I wish they'd done it privately, but maybe, like you say, because it's been made public, it will have more of a catalytic effect on him. But can I just say, we're around these extraordinary tough fighters all the time. And I mean this sincerely and from a genuine feeling of empathy for people we cover. I really see them as vulnerable at times. Do you know what I mean, Adam? That when we're around fighters, even when they're going to a fight sometimes, even when they lose, obviously, but there's a vulnerability about these people we cover.
Because they are
putting them, exactly, because they're putting themselves on the line. So as I said before, we've got them on the journey. We need to go with them after the journey as well.
Agreed. One of those people that we are most certainly on the journey with is Lawrence Okolie. And listen, he's got a fight coming up. So we're going to get him on the show and we're going to talk to him about that next. Don't go anywhere. The WBO Cruiserweight Champion is with us. Listen, we've missed you, mate. You know what I mean? We haven't said your name on the show for a bit. Obviously, we've not seen you in action for over a year. It must have been an incredibly frustrating time because I know that you like to be active. You like to be out there doing your thing.
Yeah, no, of course, you know. But The most important thing is that I'm happy to hear you say my name now, and hopefully you're going to be saying it a lot more in the coming months and years. So, I'm looking forward to it.
Obviously, we've got a fight scheduled for March. We'll talk about that with your mandatory challenger in a moment or two, and we'll talk about the prospect of big unifications. First and foremost, trainer-wise, obviously now we've stepped away from Shane McGuigan, and we've had it announced that you're teaming up with Sugar Hill Steward. Talk to me about that. Talk to me about, obviously, stepping away from Shane, the reasons for that, and why you're going in the direction of working with Sugar Hill.
I think in terms of Shane, it was more so logistically, it just didn't make sense. There was a lot of personal stuff going on in England that it was starting to become a bit draining, a bit too toxic in terms of the situation. And like I said, like, he's still a great coach. We've done a lot of great work together and gone on to, go European and world title and some defences. But I'm always in the mood as well to just freshen stuff up, try new things. You know, as we've seen throughout my career, I've moved cultures. I've moved around. I like to spar internationals, spar internationally. So it's just continuing more of the same. I was on a Great Britain team where we went all over the world in that period of time. So it's just that same kind of energy that I'm taking forwards. And then in terms of Sugar, obviously, I just think, obviously I looked around, spoke to a lot of coaches, trained with a lot. Remember, I've been out of the ring for like a year. So I've been going around for like the whole year, really trying different cultures. I won't mention, but once I got to Sugar, I think the reality is he's a great teacher from what I'm realizing. And he allows me to be humble, if that makes sense. So I want to be able to listen and look at a coach and believe what he's saying and kind of like understand he's got the experience, he's unquiet the experience, and stylistically, his sort of style works with my attributes. You know, they the Kronk's gym, typically, the best fighters that they've had are tall, long, lanky kind of fighters. And that's the kind of attributes that I have. And he wants to see it used in a particular way, and I agree with it. So, yeah, it's good.
Well, tall, long, lanky Lawrence Okoli, it's great to have you on the show. I completely agree. I think what you learned under Shane McGuigan, the patience and the jab, and obviously we know you've got that vicious right hand that is an equaliser and puts people to sleep. What I've got to ask you is, and I do think it's a great matchup for you with Sugar Hill Steward. Obviously, you're out in action on March the 11th against David Light, defending your WBO cruiserweight title. What did you make of the call out by Richard Riakpor for you the other day? Do you reckon you fight him next after that, or do you think it's better for you both to get world titles first?
I really won a world title. I just didn't really believe it. It was. I just find it so weird. I don't know if people are waiting for me to have a bad performance or whatever else, but. These guys are all getting to their mid-30s and they need to sort of crack on sooner rather than later. So I do struggle to understand why, as a world champion and the one that's actually doing the most, done the most, makes the most, why I'll be out there forcing these guys to fight. I've made it very clear that I'm available to fight anyone that really is actually up for it once I've dealt with my mandatory, and we'll see.
But do you think look, you're now with Boxer and Sky in terms of being on that platform. You know that Richard Riakpor's part of the stable, if you like, as well. He's ranked two with the IBF, Lawrence. And I don't want to make this about him, but does it build for a bigger fight if he can say beat a Jai Opatea, or do you want to get that on with him next? Do you want to sell out the O2 Arena in late summer and get it on a bit of Riakpor against a bit of Okoli, two long, powerful, lanky fighters, as you say?
Yeah, no, 100%. I just think, of course, it's bigger if, but we're living in a sport and a world where anything can happen any day. So it's like, of course, I expect to beat my mandatory. We don't know. Riakpor might believe he can beat anyone. So he wants to win a world title and then we unify. I don't know. But the reality is, a lot of times we see a lot of great fights slip into nothing because people don't take it when it's there, ready and available. I mean, throughout my career, I've had a few fighters that have said my name and tried to wait, and I'm not interested in that. I had an early rivalry with a guy called Isaac Chamberlain you know, he pulled me out and we went straight for it. Same with Matty Askim, same with Luke Watkins, same with actually the European champion, Eves. So it's just, I'm not really one of those guys that likes people to just say my name and let it fester for ages and, oh, maybe we get on, maybe we don't. I just, you know what, let's just do it. And as you said, me and Riyadh Paul, that's an O2 fight. But there's a bunch. If none of the champions want to fight, we'll do it.
It's music to Adam's ears, because we were talking about it earlier on the show, Lawrence, that we want to see people leapfrog over kind of, I don't mean tune-up fights, because you're not in that frame to have tune-up fights, but to have to you saying that you want to fight these guys, you want to make the biggest fights, Adam. It's what we want to hear, Adam, isn't it?
I want to see unifications, you know, and I think Lawrence has always maintained that conversation. So, and that's where I wanted to go with you next, Lawrence, because obviously, we know that you've come away from Matchroom. I don't want to dwell on that too much because I know that there's certain things going on behind the scenes on that. But I'm sure you would have had options. Why have you gone with Boxer? Why have you gone with Sky? What conversation did you have there? Have you had those conversations about go and get me the big unifications?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the fact is Sky and Boxer are you know, a British sort of company built around building British fighters and British fighting acts. We all have to do is look at their track record for this small time they've been around. Kell Brook Khan, the all-female show that, you know, sold out the O2, you know, like the one they had recently in Chris Eubank Jr. versus Liam Smith. It's just constantly they're interested in all British domestic dust-ups. They have a great roster of cruiserweights, as we've seen. They've probably got the best set of cruiserweights in the world on their roster. So those things were attracting me. And also, I made it very clear from the start what my intentions are. My intentions are to unify the division as many times as I can and aim to be undisputed. But it really depends on what the other champions are saying. Every time it seems like it could happen, something gets in the way. And if that's not possible, then let's just have some big fights. You know, someone like Richard is a dangerous fight for anyone, you know. And I don't see many people calling him out. I know Chris Billings Smith is as well. But not many people say that they will fight people like that, you know. So I just think I've got to the stage in my career, and like, you know, I'm not old. I'm like, you know, prime years now. So in my prime years, I have to, you know, see how far I can really take it.
How long are you for this weight? Because you're a big boy, and I've no doubt that maybe you've had a look at heavyweight as well at some point. Uh-huh. Is that something that is going to happen soon, or is it a little bit further down the line?
Ask me on the weigh-in day. The next fight.
I'll ask
that question a bit more honestly. Right now, I'm enjoying, I'm training hard, everything's going well. We'll see on weigh-in day how well I make the weight. The moment I think it's too much of a struggle and training becomes too much about that, you know, that's when it's time to move up. I think there's a lot that I can do. I can really dominate this weight class, given the opportunity to. But in terms of heavyweight, like, I spar heavyweights all the time. Sparring is different from fighting, but there's no heavyweight that you could ask that's been in the ring with me that would say, oh yeah, Lawrence, let's let him come up. That's an easy fight. So they all know, you know, a lot of attributes that they have over other cruiserweights, they can't have over me. So they're going to be bigger, but they're not going to necessarily be that much physically stronger or punch that much harder, especially once, like, I lose power going down to the cruiserweight. If that makes sense. Like, so I never aim to knock people out in the gym, but I know when I'm walking around weight that I won't say, I know what it's like in the gym with these big boys. And, you know, it's very different from when I have to come down to the 200-pound limit and then I only have, you know, 36 hours to put some weight back on. It's still powerful, as we can see, but there's levels to the whole training camp being fueled and ready. So, you know, as soon as I think that opportunities are there at heavyweight, I'm going to go for them. And I think I'll shock a lot of people with the type of fights that I dive straight into when I move up. Like, I don't think I'm going to do too much, you know, prancing around. I'm going to really just go in and say, like, yeah, let's have it.
Can I say a final thing? I'm looking forward to seeing you fight at about 225 pounds as well, Lawrence. You and I have spoken quite a lot in the background over the last year. I just want to ask a question. I know Adam said it's complex in the background, but what I'd like you to give us on air, the fact you've taken canonical ownership with your brother, taking canonical ownership of your own career, and that's mattered to you a lot because you felt like you might have been pushed around a bit in the wrong way by your old promoter. I'm going to name him Eddie Hearn because you had a very difficult time. You told me you haven't been bullied since you were a kid and you felt bullied in the last year. And I think you should, I'd love you to go on record and say that without going into the personal stuff, but you felt bullied and getting out of it has allowed you to get canonical ownership of your career. We've been talking a lot tonight. I know we're about to go to break, but we've been talking about how we care about boxers, care when they're growing, care during their career. And we need aftercare, as we're talking about Kell Brook this week. It won't have been lost on you what happened with Kell Brook. But the fact you are a different man now from taking control of your career, aren't you?
No, 100%. And I completely agree with that. And it's what, you know, obviously you and me have had loads of conversations off camera and off the record. And yeah, that's the reality. I think that's one thing that I'll always stand by is just that we are the boxers. We're the ones that take all the risks for our health and we have to, you know, go away from our camps and all the stuff that everyone knows, but people don't really feel, you know. And at the end of the day, consistently, boxers get abandoned, you know. They get abandoned by promoters if they're not winning. They get abandoned by fans if they get knocked out. They get abandoned by clingers on. And the bottom line is, you know, we only get one chance, you know. That's one thing that boxers and anyone that loves boxers needs to understand. You only get one chance to be young, you know. As much as you love Sugar Ray Leonard, we love Mayweather, we love Pacquiao. They only had one chance to be the best that they could be. And once that was over, it's over. And now they're living their lives. We don't know what's going on. So, but the difference is, a Bob Arum, a Eddie Hearn, a Frank Warren, these guys can go into it. I think Arum's about 90 right now, and he's still there promoting fighters all the way from Muhammad Ali, you know, God rest his soul, to now. So they get to keep doing it. But as fighters, we have to maximise and be treated with respect, be treated fairly, and be understood and heard. Otherwise, we're just going to be treated like cattle the whole time. So, yeah, that's how I feel about that side. It's the ugly side, the side I don't really like to get too involved in. But ultimately, I don't think I could be the type of fighter that I want to be if I allow myself to get bullied outside of the ring and go in with a little chip on my shoulder about stuff that's gone and back that way. So I'd rather make sure everything's good, make sure that when I go to bed, I can, whatever happens, I can sleep and say, win, lose, draw, make 100 million, make no money. Whatever happens, I made it on my own terms. And I can retire happy.
That's fair, man.
Brilliant stuff.
Before I let you clear off, there's obviously a big fight in your division coming up on the undercard of this Jake Paul, Tommy Fury card, where we've got Maccabi taking on Badu Jack. How do you think that one goes?
I think Maccabi, I mean, I know Badu Jack, but I don't mind saying the truth. I just think that Maccabi will win that one based on the fact that he's a natural cruiserweight and he's a bit younger. So, yeah, I think Maccabi will win that fight. And hopefully then, you know, to be honest, I know he won't. I've spoken to his management. I've spoken to, none of these guys want to fight. It's so weird. It's just bizarre. Mm. But either way, anyway, not about me, about that fight. I think Maccabi should come away with a decision win, if not like a late stoppage.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, from one big fella to the next, we then went to Las Vegas, did Adam and I. Not physically, metaphorically, of course. We alighted on a hairdressing session. I'm just having me hair done. Joe Joyce is facing Zhe Li Zhang in April in a massive heavyweight fight for the WBO interim title.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Well, I've got good underrated footwork and stuff, and I've got great timing.
Left hand there, lads, from Joyce. A Parker finally goes down.
This is what you call a proper slobber knocker. They are having it.
Parker has got back to his feet, but he waves it over.
I know what he's capable of doing. I know he's strong and so forth, but I was a little bit worried. But, I mean, he's got that spot on, and his trainer got the tactics absolutely right.
War, they don't want a war with Juggernaut.
The favourites keep on coming on Fight Night. You're listening to TalkSport. I'm Adam Catterall. Gareth A. Davies is alongside me. And now we are crossing over, I believe, to the United States of America to a barbershop. Might not be, actually be in a barbershop, actually. I wouldn't be surprised, given the prowess of our next guest. He would have a private hairdresser, I would imagine. Someone that has come to him rather than him go to them. It is, of course, the WBO interim heavyweight champion, the one and only Juggernaut himself, Mr. Joe Joyce. How are you, sir? Are you well?
Yeah, very well. Just finished the run, jumped in a quick shower, and now I'm getting my hair done, and I have to do this and then get ready. So, yeah. But, yeah, Vegas life is, you know, is quite fast-paced in camp, and we've got a lot of work to do for preparing for the fight.
Just clear up the her situation for me, Joe. Have you gone to somebody, or has somebody come to you, mate? How big time are you now? Do people come to you to do the hair?
Yeah, people come to me. It's a lot
nice.
Quicker and easier than, you know, going to the shop, waiting. It's better to...
Yeah.
Sorry, Joe, I'm laughing because I can see on the monitor you getting your hair trimmed. You've got a big bush at the back. Let me just describe it for the listeners. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're getting. It looks like a number two on the sides, and you've got.
I'm getting a fade on the side.
Sorry, a fade. Sorry. Sorry.
I'm gonna get it cane rose.
Okay. Got you.
Very nice.
Got you. So you're keeping it for the cane rose. You've got a big bush that's tied at the back at the moment. This is the big time, isn't it?
Hey, you can talk, mate.
All right.
Why you ain't got hair? Why you ain't got loads of hair? You guys need to simmer down.
Yeah, no, listen,
pipe down, Gareth, pipe down, man.
Backing down with the Juggernaut. Listen, he knows. I saw him last night, right, and he had a big pool table behind him and air hockey. Yeah. And I said to him, I'm never going to challenge you because it'd be ridiculous because you'd flick me with your little finger and I'd just go down. But I will beat you at pool and I'll beat you at air hockey. It's as simple as that. Joe, we're very...
I'll give you that.
Let me go straight here. But look, we're very excited about your bang with Zhang, we're going to call it, OK? Zhe Li Zhang is a terrific puncher.
Sure
that's... All right, yeah. Well, look, he's a terrific puncher. You never back down. We praised you earlier on in the show. You just take any fighter that's going to put on a good fight with you, and we have to applaud you for that because this is a jeopardy fight for you.
Yeah, it's a risky fight because he has got a big bang, and especially the fight with Hergovic. I thought he won that fight. It was, you know, he was struggling towards the end, like, you know, blowing towards the end. But I thought I thought he got the victory. He knocked him down early on and stuff, and I thought Hergovic was lucky to get the victory. So it's a great fight to, because obviously fighting Hergovic in the amateurs is quite a good story as well. And what better southpaw than a top 12 southpaw for the next fight?
Absolutely, and Adam and I were both there actually for that fight in Saudi Arabia, and we both thought that I think I'm right in saying that both Adam and I thought that Zhang won that fight. Does that fight with victory, are you told by George Warren, Frank Warren, lead you to face the winner of Alexander Usyk and Tyson Fury late in the year?
Yeah, while these kind of fights are all taking place around the same time, and then that has an opening for a big summer fight, hopefully Fury, if he beats Usyk.
Joe, it's such a frustrating time for you, isn't it? Because like you said, you have put together this fantastic body of work. You've thrilled the fans. You've worked your way to the point of the next fight should be the title fight. But obviously now we have this conversation about the undisputed title fight. So you've got to, you know, keep yourself busy in preparation for that. And therefore, obviously picking a decent level of opponent, I'm sure, has been quite difficult. Because have people been ready, putting their hand up, ready to get in with the juggernaut at this particular stage?
Well, I don't think so. Like throughout my career, it's been quite hard to match me because, you know. But now I have like things that I have something to offer, and I'm, you know, that number one spot. I'm already interim WBO interim, yeah. So I've got plenty to offer. And I just want to be in exciting fights, and you know, like you got to beat the best to be the best, and. And it's also strategic, and I'm right there in touching distance. So I just got to get past Zhang, and then that prepares me nicely for Usyk or Fury, because Zhang being southpaw and that.
Perfect. Joe, could I ask you? I mean, it's a weird question. I mean, maybe you have a straight answer for it. Who would you prefer to fight? Is Tyson Fury the guy you want to fight? Would it be Usyk? Obviously, you've fought him in the past, but is Tyson Fury the real draw for you? Would you prefer him to beat Usyk and line up against him in front of the British fans later in the year?
Yeah, I think definitely Fury is going to be the more exciting fight to watch. And it's the biggest fight. It's the biggest fight, especially for the UK fans and that, I think. I've kind of like been proving myself in my last kind of victories, and once I get Zhang out there, it'll set that fight up really nicely. And especially since Fury can switch, it's good to get practice with himself.
Do you beat him?
Huh?
Do you beat him?
Well, yeah, I'm not going there to lose. I think it's going to be a hard battle over 12 rounds. But yeah, I'm going for the win. Of course.
How do you think that heavyweight contest between Fury and Usyk plays out, Joe?
I think it's Usyk's quite hard to hit. He throws a lot of shots, so I think he'll cause Fury some problems, because I don't think Fury throws that many shots, but he throws them quick, and he's long, and he's tall, and he's got footwork, so arrangement and footwork. So Usyk's going to be darting around trying to nick it, and then Fury's going to try and rough him up and, do the big man thing, and lean on him and stuff.
Well, I can't wait for that fight, Joe, against Zhang. It's going to be an amazing night. I hope we're there for TalkSport. Can you just turn your head sideways? We can see you on the monitor. We can see the fade or not. I mean, we're a bit delayed on the monitor.
It's just starting out.
All right, okay. And look, he's doing your beard now as well. He's combing your beard.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it looks pretty cool. Oh, it looks pretty cool, I've got to say. There's a big bush at the back. The cornrows are going to look amazing on the top. The juggernaut is nearly ready. Can we go shopping with you next time or something? Or be in the Arts District or out in a nightclub with you next time we get you on?
Walmart with me or...
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Walk around Walmart with Joe Joyce on a Saturday night. The new show on Talk Sports.
Love it. Joe, thanks for just nipping in, mate. Go well in camp. Hope everything's going well out there with you.
Pleasure to talk to you guys, as always.
Yeah, can't wait to see you, mate. Cheers. Well, after Big Joe Joyce, we were joined by a genuine friend of the show who my producer, Ed Huntley, made me avoid last week. It was Huntley to Davis to Heaney. No, go speak to Stormzy. We explained it to Nathan Heaney. He doesn't mind. He's the nicest man in boxing. But we had some serious things to talk about. His next opponent with Jack Flatley in a sequel, but also about how boxers perhaps need to promote themselves. And... you know, the truth is, Nathan made some very salient comments about boxers that have been involved for a long time in the sport, and the fact that for a while in his town, Stoke-on-Trent, when white-collar boxing came in, it took it away from the regular guys on small hall shows. Here's what he had to say. It's very, very interesting.
There's a big, big cut across the top of the right eyebrow, a huge gash, and it's going to go to the cards here. The referee, Steve Graves, indicating that was caused by an accidental clash of heads. We've had four completed rounds, so we will go to the scorecards.
And still, IBO International Middleweight Champion, Nathan the Hitman Healy.
Oh, listen, I know that Nathan Healy won that fight, but he's an honest guy, and he will not be satisfied winning in that way. I wouldn't be surprised that when the stitches are healed on that nasty cut, he gives Jack Flatley another crack at that.
Why, Delilah?
I'll tell you what, that last little ditty from me there was a little bit Conor McGregor, mate. That was a bit Mystic Mac predicting the future, because we are here. And that is why Mr. Heaney very kindly has given up a bit of time on his Saturday night. I believe he's actually out and about with his good lady this evening. I think that is the case. But welcome back to the show, Nathan. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. Thank you, lads. Yeah, like you say, it's a bit late today, but I was feeling a bit tired. But as soon as I heard Gareth and writing, Joe Joyce trimming his bush, it really woke me up. It got me really fired up. I was thinking, it just got me going, lad. So I do appreciate it, Gareth.
Let me say, I mean, before we get into the preamble about your return, the sequel with Jack Flatley, I do have to apologise for not interviewing you live on the show last week, because I bumped into you about 9 times ringside at Anthony Yard and Arta
Betabiev. What are you playing, He's always good value.
I was caught between Stormzy at the time, right?
Yeah. And Tyson Fury. The level now.
And now what I'm saying is that will never happen again. But I'd just done Tyson with Derek Chisora and Bob Arum, and then I was moving around the ring, and I saw Nathan. I said hello to you, didn't I?
Not the Zedless. I don't need the Zedless box, mate. Get him off.
Terrible.
No, he didn't. I said, I want Nathan next. And they went, no, go to Stormzy now. Yeah. So blame Ed, our producer, who's sitting giggling in the studio now. When you want to get hold of someone, get hold of Ed, our producer, Ed Huntley. Yeah. And you can tell him the next time we see you live, if we're up there doing the event, that it was his fault, not mine. My apologies, Nathan Heaney.
Yeah, to be fair, I'll apologise myself, because obviously I said hello to you, Gareth, but Adam, I didn't say hello to you. I got starstruck by all these guys around me. I had Simon Jordan, I had Jim White behind me, I had Big Tyson at the front, Bob Arum. And I saw Gareth, I was like, yo, mate, said hello. But then I forgot the real star was on the opposite side of the ring on the comms. So I'll say hello to you next time, mate.
Good man. That's what I like to hear. Listen, you just heard there in the preamble, building up to you coming onto the programme, we were reflecting on your previous encounter with Jack Flatley, which ended prematurely, obviously, because of that nasty, nasty cut. That's all nice and healed. And we kind of said there that you wouldn't want to win in that manner. You want conclusive endings. And we are here again. Is that kind of the narrative that has brought you back here? Because you don't need to go here, if we're really, really honest. But is it because of the way that last fight ended that you've gone, nah, man, let's go back and I'll show you what the crack is?
Yeah, that is certainly one of the main reasons behind obviously having the rematch. At first, after the fight, I mean, immediately, their team was straight away calling for the rematch, which, granted, they're always going to want that, but we want to do things on our terms in terms of who we're going to fight and stuff. And when I decided that the rematch with Jack Flatley was good, I mean, obviously I spoke to Frank and George, and we thought it'd be a really good headliner. And I was like, yeah, I was well up for it, yeah, really up for it. And like you say, the unfinished business in terms of not ending the way it was, and there was like a narrative that Flatley was going to come into the second half of the fight to potentially take over. It's got some really good questions that weren't answered that will be answered in this fight.
You know my thought process on belts in boxing, but let's just park that to one side for a second, because this fight does have a WBA trinket connected to it, of which will then affect rankings for you in this particular division. Does that also give you an extra little 5-10% when you're in the gym, knowing what the outcome could be coming through a fight like this?
1,000,000%. I mean, when the fight, I knew George was going to try to sort something out for me and Frank, but I didn't know until the poster had been shared out exactly what was happening. So when I saw the WBA Continental, I was absolutely buzzing. I run straight over to Steve like an excited kid at Christmas, because it's just nice, and again it brings something back to me city, like a Stoke, because they're all backing me, so it's great to bring something back here as well. And like you say, get you in the rankings and just add something more for me to fight for.
I need to ask you, Nathan. You're a very salient person, a very germane person right now, to ask about a couple of things we've been talking about tonight. One is, and which we will talk about, and we are talking about in boxing at the moment, in all seriousness. One is the blurring of the lines of boxing with the popularity of the Misfits fighters and YouTube influencers and so on. And also, I mean, I've just heard from Kell Brook's father, Terry, that Kell is fine. He's around his parents at the moment. He's just emailed me, actually, say that Kell is fine. We've got, and you are the perfect example of this, you come from Stoke, you've gathered a following during you weren't that well known pre-pandemic, but you've gathered a following, you know how to harness a crowd now, you've got this brilliant walkout, you give your all to it, you sell lots of tickets. Perhaps boxing can learn from you at a different level to the stadium fights, but also perhaps we can learn something from you about how you feel about the aftercare of boxers as well.
Yeah, well, there's a few things there. And obviously, the Misfit stuff. I've got to be honest, the way I view that is the way that I viewed white-collar boxing in my city of Stoke-on-Trent. Essentially, on a micro scale, white-collar boxing wiped professional boxing out of this city because You had professional boxers over the last 10 to 15 years that would have been their main... They'd have been fighting local town halls and stuff. Then the next minute, probably managed by the same people that they then... These white collar shows that turn up 4, 5, 6, 8 times in a year. And then these professional fighters are then competing for shows against other white collar shows where really the general public, unless you're a purist, you don't really know the difference between a white collar title and a professional title.
Very interesting.
When I first won the Midlands area title, the belt looked horrendous in comparison to some white collar cranky thing that I've seen that had like little sparkles on it, like, and to the general public, they know no difference. So, yeah, it's weird because now they've got a platform to fight on that once upon a time would have been really hard to get on, but now you can get on if you've got a blue tick or a bit of popularity. Now, I mean, I'm a popular fighter myself. I'm on the stage because of that reason, but I've also boxed for 23 years. Wow. I've boxed nearly 100 fights as an amateur. I've dedicated my life to the sport, so I think I'm lucky that where I am, but I'm also deserving of it in the weight that I've put the graft in. I've put the graft in over the years, yeah.
What about those... Sorry to cut across, Adam. What about those who need aftercare as well? What about boxers needing aftercare? Should they be paying a stipend into a union at the moment? Should we develop something? You'd be the perfect person, I think, when you give up boxing to lead this kind of thing because you know the nuts and bolts of the sport. But do we need to create something that creates a union and aftercare?
I do. Yeah, I do believe that, yeah. But I also do believe that fighters should be very careful for one who they mix with in the first place because... Ooh. The people you're around are going to be the byproducts of how you conduct yourself in the first place. If you've got pals that are on this and they're on that and they're living a party lifestyle, there's a very good chance you're going to get dragged into that as well. Whereas if you're like me, just me and my missus and my two kids and stuff, and obviously I've got very, very good friends. I'd never get dragged into something like that. So I think there should be a bit of guidance maybe from people, but that should come from parents and family, not so much other people, if you know what I mean. I don't know. I suppose it's the upbringing a little bit. It's very easy to get drawn into the stuff that we've seen recently.
Just to finish on you and this event, obviously, how delighted are you that this is actually in Telford? I know it's not Stoke, mate, but it's literally next door, innit? You know what I mean? Your lot will come out. They will travel ready to rock and roll for this one.
Yeah, well, in terms of like miles, it's not that far, but it's still a 45-minute drive. It's not on my back door. My guys still have to travel a very like 45 minutes. Usually 45 minutes for an hour, no matter where we go. So yes, they're amazing, my lot, and tickets have gone amazingly well as always. I mean, for me, I'm surprised how well it's gone because the January payday is probably the worst one out of all of them in the year because we just had Christmas and New Year, But then we got another one. We got February payday, and I know there's a load of my guys that said, "Listen, mate, can I sort them later on in the month?" I'm like, "Absolutely sound." So that's what we'll do, and then we'll come down and we'll sing Delilah. There's no chance that's being banned, and that's it. And that's what we'll do.
Happy man Heaney, eh?
Absolutely. Listen, the atmosphere will be The atmosphere will be absolutely rocking. And in the aftermath, I've no doubt that Mr. Davies will come to interview you and he will be asking you about potential British titles. But we'll get to that at another time. All right, mate. Nev, thank you very much for giving up a little bit of time. All the best to you.
Thank you very much, mate. And thanks to any Stokies that are listening to him. I think my auntie Sue and my uncle Roy are listening as well. So hello to them guys as well. But yeah, all right. See you
then. Call out King. See you, buddy.
There you go.
Well, finally, we were joined by a man who is facing the greatest of all time, as he calls himself, the money man. It's Floyd Mayweather. Aaron Chalmers, once of Geordie Shore, seven MMA fights deep in Bama and Bellator, is having a boxing match, yes, on February the 25th in London, O2 Arena, against the one and only Floyd Mayweather. Chalmers told me he was pinching himself.
Gareth, do you know what it is? This is how crazy life is, right? So I was with one of the Floyd's team years ago in Belgium, and he was my security guard for us for the weekend in Belgium. And as you know me, I'm a very polite and nice person. Do you know what I mean? I like to think I am anyway. And I just got on with him like a house on fire, and we ate together, and like I just treat him like he was one of the lads that were with us. Do you know what I mean? I didn't treat him like he was my security or let. And I remember leaving, and he said I've had such a great time, and then four years later, I got wind that he was booking the fight, messaged him on Instagram. I said, do you remember me? Within a minute, text me phone, ring me ASAP. I rang him. He said, Aaron, how could I forget you? He said, we had such a good time in Belgium. He said, I'm going to get you this fight. That was on the Thursday, bang. Saturday morning, come through, contract was there. So I feel like treating someone how you want to be treated has paid dividends, because it's come back around and in a good way for me.
Luck always does play a part, but do you have to pinch yourself at the moment that you're stepping in with one of the greatest ever and one of the modern greats in the ring on February the 25th?
It's absolutely surreal, Gareth, to think of the life I've had. I'm just a lad from Newcastle who's took every opportunity that's been presented. I've worked in McDonald's, I've worked in Asda, I've worked in a factory, scaffolding, offshore, Geordie Shore. Everything I've been offered, I've took, and it's crazy. Like I could actually write a book in a couple of years' time, like how madness it's been. And once, like online, I'm getting so much love, but also so much hate. But who wouldn't take the fight? Who wouldn't take the fight? Everyone's going, you're going to get battered. The man's battered Pacquiao, Canelo, Oscar De La Hoya, all these people. I've had one fight, but do you know what it is? I've got one of the biggest balls you'll ever see, because how many people with one fight would jump in there with him? Do you know what I mean?
Do you believe that you can beat him? What are the parameters of the exhibition bout? Is it 8 2-minute rounds, 8 3-minute rounds?
Six or eight twos. Do you know what it is, right? I am just going to go in there and be as sharp and as fit as I possibly can. I can't go around Newcastle saying, someone come in and emulate Floyd Mayweather. I couldn't go around the world and get someone to emulate him to sport. So all I'm working on is to be as sharp, as snappy, and as fit as I possibly can. And not just that, I'm going to have as much fun and enjoy the moment, because this is like a rocky experience for me. It's like being given a chance. This is something that I can pass down to my kids long when I'm gone, and grandkids. Oh, Floyd Mayweather, one of the greatest of all time. Oh, funny enough, my great-granddad stepped in there with him for an exhibition.
You're still training with Adam Booth, I take it, yeah?
At the moment, I'm up in Newcastle, so I'm with Nick, who was in my corner for my last fight. So I haven't been down with Adams for a few months just because of stuff going on in my personal life with the baby and stuff not being well. So I'm up home at the moment.
What advice are you going to get from other people about going into the ring?
A win for me, first of all, is just getting in there with one of the best to ever do it. That's the first win. If I land a clean jab, all I need is one picture. All I need is that one picture, and I can use that for the rest of my life. I can use that one picture of me jabbing Floyd for the rest of my life. But like I say, it all depends how he approaches it. If he approaches it like he did Deji, then he's gonna be quite wide open. Do you know what I mean? But Deji just kind of covered up and was walking back all the way around the ring. So.
But you'd fancy yourself against Deji or KSI, wouldn't you?
Yes, 100%. Like I say, like fair play, all these YouTubers and stuff, they're doing absolutely amazing, and I want to be part of it, you know what I mean? But what you've got to think of as well is see some of these kids, some of these people, not, listen, no disrespect to them. They've never had a normal job. They've never got up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go carry scaffold around a building site. So when it comes down to swinging and having some heart, have half of these got the balls? I don't think they have. It would be nice to see if it come to a bit of a bite down on the gum shield and let's have a fight. I think half of them would bottle it.
You want to prove something in here as well against Mayweather, because I know that you've had ambitions to fight Jake Paul and Tommy Fury behind the scenes, because you and I have known each other a long time. We did a podcast together 4 years ago when you were coming into your MMA career with Bellator. This could project you into fights with Jake Paul and Tommy Fury, you believe, as well, yeah?
I would like to think so. Like I say, I don't look at them and think these are out. Like, I feel like towards the end of last year, all them kind of people were getting away from us. Like, they were getting out of reach. I wasn't active. I had a lot going on in my personal life. And I started to think these fights are not going to happen. And then, like I say, a little bit of good luck has come back around and put us in this position. So I would like to think, with all due respect, Tommy, Jake, I would love these down the line. I would love them. I would absolutely love them, because I'm fighting Floyd. Do you know what I mean? So that in itself is a win-win. And I fancy myself. I would love to get in with Jake, Tommy, and KSI. Once I fight them three, I would happily sail off into the sunset with me kids. You know what I mean? And I know that's my kids set up for the rest of their life if that happens. So of course I'm chasing them fights, but the main focus at the moment is Floyd, and then I think apparently Jake and Tommy fight the same night. So Give me the winner or the loser of that fight.
Well, that's about it for this week. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast and our boxing channel on YouTube. We're live at Adam Azim next weekend. This young rising star will be there for the live broadcast. And also, listen out for the podcast extra this week with Anthony Yard and Tunde Ajay. What a night we had with them a week ago. What a night we'll have with Adam Azim. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to all our shows, podcast, YouTube, and listen to us live on a Saturday night. From me and Adam Catterall, it's good night.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.